Welcome to the sidelines. This is Matt Dolliff. I'm back once again with Ty Anderson, Sports Hub Digital Team, 98.5, the Sports Hub, that is. Ty, are you feeling okay? You sound like you're under the weather.
Yeah, I'm all right. I got a slight throat.
COVID!
Tickle here. Yeah, that's the thing, though. It's that now, the worst part about this whole thing is that every time I feel slightly under the weather, I'm like, oh no, this is the end. I start apologizing to everyone I've ever wronged.
This is the end. Yeah, you get your affairs in order, bucko.
Yeah, delete
your
the
diet internet. Isn't helping.
No, it never helps. It's gotten better though. The fact that restaurants aren't open, and the fact that I don't love going to restaurants. I went to one for like the first time since this whole thing happened a couple weeks ago. Gotta say, did not like it. Did not like it at all. Made me feel like I was being a dick.
Call your mom like, hi, I'm in CVS. Are hot tamales and a Monster Energy drink good for a sore throat? I don't know. This doesn't seem right. Why did the restaurant make you feel bad?
I don't know. It just doesn't feel like anyone is actually adhering to anything that makes any damn sense. You know, none of us wearing masks. You know, the server is. That's great for them. But what about everyone else who isn't wearing one? And I don't know. It just felt awkward and weird. Like I felt like I was being selfish. I'm like, I should just order takeout and just eat it at home. It was just an odd experience. I don't know. It was unnerving, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
I would think so. So you ate indoors, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I was visiting my dad. My dad lives in downtown Salem, and there's that burrito place we like, Howling Wolf, So we went there and
there's no patio set up?
No, there was, but it was like 40 degrees that night, and it was right on the water, or right close to the water in Salem. So we're like, nah, let's eat inside.
So you'd rather catch COVID than be a little chilly, is what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't prepared for the cold that night. Oh boy. I don't know. Feels weird.
I would go get tested, honestly.
Nah, I'm probably fine.
I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, you're off to a good start here. It's ridiculous.
Yes, good vibe. It's a good vibe we got going here. I'm going to get COVID through the computer speakers.
Can't wait.
Well, I tested twice. I tested negative both times, and I literally flew across the country and back. Mm-hmm. So, and we went to restaurants. I mean, we ate outside in Seattle, but we went to restaurants. We went places. You know, I'm not too terribly worried about it. I think as long as you're wearing your mask and doing your best to social distance, there's like almost nothing to worry about, I would say.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping, and that's what I'm assuming, because I feel totally fine besides a little scratchy throat. Maybe I've been talking too much. Maybe that's a sign from above saying shut up for once in your life.
Are you talking to your dad too much? Who are you talking to?
No, I don't know, just in general. I don't know.
You're talking to those Star Wars posters behind you?
I might be.
Vader, don't look at me like that.
Playing Madden, having an absolute meltdown. No big
deal. Folks, he's lost it.
Oh, that happened in April. I've been crazy. I've been crazy for 28 years, but I think I've officially gone crazy about May or June, I would say.
Yes, quite indeed. Things are getting crazy.
Yeah, how are you, though?
Riots are coming back up. It's like, I'm just, all right, it might be time to delete Twitter again. People are getting angry. You know?
Yeah. No, and that's another thing. I think that the best thing you can do for the next week is just don't go on any sort of thing unless you absolutely have to. And I'm saying, like, any sort of forum, any sort of online thing, even group chats. I'm like, I'm sort of opting out of group chats right now because the conversations are getting a little too heated for my liking. Listen, I know I live in hell. I don't need constant reminders that I'm living in hell.
Yeah, it was. You had a tweet. I'm trying to remember what exactly the chain of events, but you tweeted, "What fresh hell awaits us now?" And then literally something hellacious happened later that day. I forget what it was. Do you remember?
Yeah, so that was I was watching Wheel of Fortune, and I was real excited about the wheel because I've hit that point in my life.
We're excited about wheels, folks. Good wheel talk going on.
So I was watching Wheel of Fortune, and I'm solving puzzles, I'm buying vowels, I'm having a great time.
And then they interrupt me.
They interrupt it, and they go, the FBI has a breaking news report. And I was like, all right, if they're interrupting the wheel, something big is going on. So that's why I was like, what fresh hell awaits us now? It was the election hacking from Iran and Russia. And I was just like, all right, well, not sure what interrupted the wheel for this, but that's okay. So I was just waiting for like the worst thing to be happening. Like, there's so many things that are happening that were just like falling by the wayside because there's so much other horrible stuff going on. And it's like, it's truly wild that they, I think Winovich talked about this. They found aliens this year, and everyone's like, whatever, there's aliens. But how about this instead? It's just like every day there's something, some insane new report. And we're just like, oh, well.
Yeah. I'm not like a big conspiracy guy, but some conspiracies turn out to be true. So it's like you can't just dismiss everything that comes out. And I sort of feel like my conspiracy theory about conspiracy theories is that the FBI, CIA, they let guys like Alex Jones just rant about everything. Because he sounds so insane, because some of the shit he's saying is so insane that like you don't believe anything. But then he'll slip in little nuggets of truth, but then you just have a hard time believing any of it. Like Alex Jones was talking about Epstein like years ago before anybody else even like knew who he was. So
I saw that he was on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Was
that yesterday? 2 days ago?
Yesterday he was on with him and Tim Dillon, who was one of the funniest comedians in the world, but I mean he's my kind of comedian because he's absolutely insane as well, and he dabbles in conspiracies, but he tries to do it in a funny way. He's not like Alex Jones. I got the documents are here, look this up,
but I don't really, might be too much
having those guys on. That had to be a big screw you to anyone who's throwing a tantrum at Spotify over Rogan. Like there were reports that people at Spotify were trying to get his podcast censored and all that. It's like, guys, you can just listen to something else. Why are you losing your mind over a couple shithead comedians?
That's the point I've hit with everything. It's just like, you know what? If it brings me no joy and I don't like it, I'm just going to do something else. And I think that's, I wish more people would take that approach versus trying to get someone's life ruined or their livelihood taken away or whatever the case may be. And I don't like Alex Jones, but that's a separate issue. You know what I mean? Like that's not, who am I to say, oh, well, he doesn't deserve to make money. I don't think that he should be given, say, top dollar platforms to spew some of the stuff that I think is obviously like what you said, so over the top, it's just clearly not true.
No, just let him talk. I'm not in favor of anyone getting censored. I think Alex Jones is a lunatic. He says a lot of things that it's just like, that's just, there's no way any of what he's saying is remotely true, but it's like, just let's listen for yourself and decide that he's crazy.
Yeah. I think
it's not a good precedent to set to like try to block people from seeing it or censoring stuff, because it's like, what if someone who's not on your side is suddenly in charge and now he's starting to censor stuff that you agree with?
Yeah, we've talked
about this. Not a good precedent.
We've talked about this before. I think it's just like everyone wants to be part of the mob until the mob comes for them, and then it's too much. So yeah. My take on it is just and this is just the nihilistic, everything's bad person. I mean, like, whatever. I can't, there's so much going on in my own life that I can't care about what celebrities and what people are saying because it just doesn't affect me. It just can't affect me.
Yeah. I think you also tweeted something over the weekend, like just go eat an orange or something like that.
Well, that's random, but
pretty good advice, I'd say.
Yeah. Eat an orange, drink some water. Yeah. Get a healthy amount of sleep.
Yeah. Get some vitamin C.
Yeah.
Sleep.
Meditate if you can.
Do some yoga. Go for a walk.
We are on a freight train of depression hitting us. It's coming. It's just between the seasonal depression, the COVID depression, the election coming up, all these other horrible things happen. California's on fire again, by the way, in case you missed that. And it's just like, stop arguing with people who do not pay you or do not do anything to provide you happiness in life. Just live your life. Just do it. Exactly. And there's just too many people out there just devoting energy to entities and celebrities and people that just do not play a factor in their day-to-day life. Just everyone, just eat an orange, please, God.
Right.
killing me.
It's funny, like, yeah, I've said this before, but it's not exactly like a thing that hasn't been said before, but it's like, you know, you could just turn the Twitter off and the problems will go away. Even if you Absolutely. Say something controversial or someone doesn't like your article, you literally just don't look at people screaming into the void on Twitter, and it doesn't exist in your life. It only affects you if you choose to let it do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's just like, I've become a lot better at simply muting and moving on, because why am I going to lend, you know, the platform that I've earned to some lunatic? Why am I going to do that? I'm just not gonna. So let's not do it, you know? And I think more people need to take that approach. I need to take that approach more, obviously. But I think that's something I'm just seeing too many people just getting sucked in by entities and honestly just hobgoblins of social media that are only there to like upset you. It's like, why are you doing this? Just walk away, leave it alone.
Yeah. Why are you flying by my window and throwing a pipe bomb in my window that's shaped like a jack-o'-lantern? This is very strange. I think we all need to calm down.
Exactly. So I'm taking that approach. And then the Patriots game happened. How was that, by the way?
Oh my God, that was not fun. Not fun. I've been bummed out the last few days because I'm still a fan at heart, and I try my best to, you know, like offer like an objective take on the whole situation. And my objective take is it's not good. Not good right now. They're getting the poor quarterback play, no matter who's on the field. And I'm worried. I'm worried they might just suck now.
I feel like I've been duped by the whole Jared Stidham talk, because I don't think he's very good at all. I don't see it.
Very concerning that he's stepping on the field and he's not only not seizing the opportunity, but like he feels like he's going backwards. So I don't know what the hell's going on there.
And all this offseason, it was, well, they're confident in him. And then you had his college coach saying why he could be good. And you know, listen, he's played what? Grand total of probably 25 minutes in the NFL. 25 of them have been completely meaningless in the grand scheme of things. But it is frustrating though when you hear all the stuff about him in the offseason program, and he looks worse than he did in the preseason in 2019.
It happens. It happens with everyone. They did it about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I mean Jimmy Garoppolo has turned out to be pretty good. But I don't know. I'm still confident that they could find the next quarterback, because like Bill's hit on a lot of quarterbacks. He hit on Garoppolo. I'd give him credit for Matt Castle, even though he was a late round pick. And I mean, he drafted like Ryan Mallett, who sucked. But I give him credit for Jacoby Brissett, who's still in the league. And you know, if Philip Rivers gets hurt or he just sucks so bad that the Colts probably wouldn't hesitate to put him back in there, I wouldn't mind if the Patriots got Jacoby Brissett back somehow. But But I think like I'm not gonna crap all over him for Cam Newton just yet. I mean, Cam Newton looks like he had a lobotomy out there. He looks like he's completely off the reservation. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know that he's not taking the coat, because this is what I was saying going into the year. It's like, as long as he stays healthy, which I'm not sure he's even healthy, and number two, takes the coaching and absorbs everything. I'm not sure that he's like tuning out the coaches, which is like a popular take to have in a time like this when the team looks the way it does. But like, he's not getting it. It feels like there are plays, and I want to give Mark Daniels from the Providence Journal credit for this. He tweeted a screenshot of a play from the game where he's got three guys right in front of him, and he's not seeing it. He's just not seeing any of them. He's looking past them because I guess he wants to make the big play. But like, you got to get a drive starter going at that point. You got to do something to, you know, get momentum. And he's just like looking completely past it, not seeing these three wide open guys. It's like, I feel like Josh McDaniels did okay. I feel like the offense is being coordinated fine, but the quarterback isn't executing.
Yeah. That's,
like, I said the Patriots were going to go 11-5 this year, and this was all contingent on Cam Newton being a representative NFL quarterback. And when you get in the worst quarterback play in the league, I know people are going to say it looks bad for Belichick, but no coach can overcome quarterbacks playing this bad. And it's just, I didn't think it would get this bad, but that's just crazy how bad Cam Newton's been. I don't know what the hell happened to him.
Yeah, just the vision just seems off, right? There's so many throws that he makes where, especially the last three, 4 weeks, I would include the Raiders game where he's making throws and you're going, what is the play there? What are you trying to do? It's just,
oh yeah. He had a terrible interception in that game too. He had a bad interception against the Seahawks even in that game where he came back and almost won, but like, I don't know what the difference between the first couple weeks and the last couple weeks. It's just been, stark.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been a gradual decline here from, ugh, this doesn't look good to, oh my God, this might be unplayably bad at this point. And that goes from Newton to Stidham to Hoyer. None of them have looked any damn good at all. And this is what we're seeing now. I think with just, you need, if you don't have the talent, you need the smarts, you know? And I think that's maybe what we're realizing now with Brady last year, is for as frustrating as that was watching it, when you have a guy who's always aware of his options, who's always aware of, you know, what the best option to go to in any situation, it makes a difference over the course of 60 minutes. And I think that we're seeing the flip side of that right now. And you don't have the talent and you don't have the smarts under center. It is an absolute nightmare.
That's the thing. But the thing is, guys are starting to get open now. So that's the frustrating part, is that he's missing guys. He's not seeing guys that are getting open. And so I feel like if you had Brady in there, they might actually be a lot better on offense than they were last year, because they're actually getting open, and Brady's gonna see that and actually throw to guys that are getting open. Like, Cam Newton's never been a pocket passer kind of guy, like, no, a guy who's gonna run the Brady offense. So I don't know. It feels like maybe they're trying to do that the last couple of weeks, and they're sort of starting to realize that they can't. So I think Josh McDaniels was saying, Jed Fish, other assistant coach, would say, we're going to get back to, you know, basics. We're going to try to emphasize Cam Newton's strength. So I guess we're probably going to see something closer to what we saw in the first couple of weeks with the heavy formations and Cam running the ball. And, like, I think you have to. I don't think you can have Cam just run the Brady offense where he's trying to, like, read the field and diagnose the deal. He's way overthinking things out there. And it's just like but the problem is he admitted that he's pressing. And so, like, the way the quarterback acts tends to filter out to the rest of the offense or the rest of the team. And if the quarterback's pressing and it's not, he's not feeling, he's sort of like his, I don't know what the word is, but like, this was the concern with Cam Newton going into the season, is what's going to happen when he faces some adversity. Because, for lack of a better term, he's been a front runner in his career. He's been a guy where he's Superman and he's ripping his chest open and he's flying high when they're winning and he's playing well. When he doesn't play well, he's sort of on the complete opposite end of that spectrum. And it looks really, really bad right now. It looked really good in the first couple of weeks. It looks really bad now. So it's been sort of a bipolar experience with Cam Newton so far this season. So, I mean, they really need to do something to just get his confidence back, I guess. If he's not feeling confident, they have to get his confidence back, because if you don't have a confident quarterback, you're screwed. How many times have we looked at teams around the league, like Jacksonville or whatever, and said, wow, if they had a competent quarterback, they'd be a good team. Like, this is a team where I think if they still had Brady, who was fully engaged, or if they even just had a good quarterback who could run the offense and just, like, throw to the open guy, they'd look a lot better right now. They'd be probably over 500. So
do you think that that there's an injury issue going on? I know that's been sort of not a theory per se, but you look at Newton's struggles, right? His last healthy season, he had a great start. I think they went 6-2, and then he lost, I think it was 6 or 7 starts in a row, and you find out the shoulder's injured and he needs surgery. Do you think that there's any injury concern going on there? I know he has been throwing to the right. That's an issue as well. So I'm curious what you think.
I don't like to make that excuse, because, like, you're the quarterback. You got to play through just about everything anyway. So, I mean, maybe he's having shoulder issues again, which would be a major concern. I just don't want to make that into the reason why he's not – his accuracy has been so unbelievably bad. It defies explanation. Like, he threw a ball, he basically spiked a ball at Damir Bird's feet on one play when he was open, and, like, the first interception he threw was just mind-bogglingly bad, and, like, he overthrew Edelman on that deep ball interception. I forget if it was an underthrow or overthrow, but it wasn't even close. And he's never been the most accurate guy, but it's been even worse than expected. And I don't know. My bigger concern is that it's a mental thing and not a physical thing. Because even when Tom Brady played through everything, and like, and he's arguably the most mentally tough player in the history of the league. So he could overcome having like a bad shoulder or a bad knee, or, you know, he played through ankle sprains and, you know, the elbow injury. He had that, the hand was sliced open. I think it was that 2017, and he absolutely lit it up in the playoffs. So it's like,
yeah,
that was you have to be able to. Yeah, right. It was the Jaguars game, so it was 2017, mm-hmm. And he completely lit it up. He lit it up in the Super Bowl that year. So it's like, if you're the quarterback, if you're playing through something, you have to be able to overcome it. I don't want to use that as an excuse, but I mean, wouldn't be surprised. I mean, maybe he's going off the cliff, which would be unfortunate, because it only took a few weeks for that to happen.
And right.
The conspiracy theory could be that COVID's affecting him somehow, and the, you know, lingering effects or something. But I don't know. Do you lose your mind when you have COVID? Like, it's the way he's seeing the field more. The problem is the accuracy and the way he's seeing the field are both poor right now. But he could probably overcome a little bit of a lack of accuracy if he was seeing an open guy. And if he saw like N'Keal Harry wide open over the middle of the field, N'Keal Harry could catch a ball that's away from his body a little bit and not the most accurate pass. And they could sort of, you know, mask that. But if he's not seeing the field, then he's screwed.
No, I'd agree with that. And just the offense as a whole, I'm still team buy at the deadline. I think you have to, because I think the amount of pieces that you would trade as a seller is not worth the return. I don't think you'd get anything more than a fifth round pick for Julian Edelman. If we are to believe the Gilmore rumors, which I'm sure we'll talk about more in depth here shortly, you're not going to get a first round pick for him. That seems to be the word. I mean, the McCourties, do they want to be traded? B, what could you get for them? It just feels like you owe this offense a shot of adrenaline versus stripping it away, because I just don't see the value in that. Given the uncertainty of A, college football, and B, how this team drafts to begin with.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not – I choose to be patient with draft picks. I'm not going to act like this year's draft class sucks just because they haven't contributed much yet. It usually takes time.
I'm talking more trading down, and it's like, yeah. If you get a second-round pick, but you know it's not going to be a second-round pick. They're going to trade into two-thirds and a fifth.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying Bill's been a perfect drafter. He's been far from that. But, like, yeah, my issue in the draft – is can they keep picking quarterbacks and not just like ignoring that position? Like I would have liked it. They'd probably be in a lot better shape whether or not the kid could play. It would at least feel a lot better if they went and drafted, you know, a Jordan Love or Jalen Hurts, a guy from Oklahoma, someone like that. So they obviously weren't going to get Joe Burrow or Tua or Justin Herbert, who all went really high. But if they took one of those guys that I just mentioned or someone else who's a rookie quarterback, they'd be in better shape because they'd at least have another option. And who knows, maybe those guys could play. Maybe Jordan Love. I feel like Jordan Love might be a good pick for the Packers, because the way Aaron Rodgers is playing this year, he sucked last week, but the way Aaron Rodgers started this year, it's the same as Brady when they drafted Garoppolo, because it makes you think that Jordan Love is a real threat to Rodgers at that position. So, like, they got to start taking some shots at that position. So, I mean, I hope they do it next year. Or else, like, what the hell are they doing? And maybe we'll all end up being wrong about Jared Stidham, but it does not look good right now. Jared Stidham's barely flashed anything so far. So I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what they're going to do.
And well, if we go back to that draft, the Patriots were linked to Love, right? That was something I remember that was one of the reports that they were doing.
I think they did meet with him.
Like, big dive or big research on Love. I remember that being one of the headlines. I remember last year Love's stats weren't as great as they were the season prior. Maybe that spooked them a little bit. But obviously, I mean, this is not – for me, I just think they need – you know, Dalton Keene plays, and he gets on the board with the catch, which is great. They just need more off – they need more offensively. Damir Bird has been their best target, and that's fine, but that's not exactly, I think, how they drew it up. So I would still try to acquire another wideout or another tight end and give this offense another jolt of life.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to my take after the 49ers game. And this is different from they should sell at the deadline, because I'm not necessarily saying that. But I feel like I feel like the control is slipping away from Bill. It's slipping away from Bill as far as controlling the locker room and everyone, because everyone's effort has not been good. And all the leaders of the team, David Andrews and Matthew Slater, agree, said publicly, like, the effort is not good enough, and we need to get our crap together. And I have a feeling that Devin McCourty, who I'm going to talk to later today, is going to say the same thing. It's like the effort's not there. And it's tough. It's different not having Tom Brady around, and it's hard to feel confident when your quarterback is playing as poorly as he is. So, I mean, that message sort of has to come from Cam Newton. But I don't know. Bill might have to make one of these surprise trades where he just moves on from someone who you weren't really expecting. And I know Stephon Gilmore at this point would be something that you're sort of expecting. But Gilmore hasn't been fully engaged based on all the reporting and the way he's looked on the field. He feels like he's got one foot out the door now because he realized he's the latest high-end Patriots player to realize that he's not going to get that next contract here. He's going to have to get it somewhere else. And Bill would rather trade him than lose him for a compensatory pick. And I think they should trade Gilmore because they can get more than a compensatory third round pick if they trade him now, which is probably not a first round pick, but maybe a second round pick.
Or maybe
I think they should do that. I think I think it would be addition by subtraction at this point, honestly. If they move Gilmore somewhere else and they elevate JC Jackson to a starting cornerback spot, he's been very good in all three seasons he's been here. I have complete confidence in JC Jackson being a starting corner for this team. And I feel like they might get better that way because Gilmore's not playing up to his usual standard, and I don't think he's totally into it. As far as Edelman, it might just be more of a physical thing just because he's 34. It's just the reality. That position, he might just be dropping off physically. And, I mean, Jacoby Myers goes in there on Sunday and he makes some catches. He looks like he's actually trying. He's one of their only guys that actually tried and played well. And that's a guy that, like, needs to play well to earn more playing time. And I think they should just start playing him more. And I feel like if they just start playing him over Edelman more, they'd probably be better off. I just feel like Bill needs to start making these, like, drastic message-sending kind of moves, I think, because it's sort of slipping away from him. And the whole thing about tuning the coach out, I know it's a cliche, but it does happen. And I wouldn't rule out that it would happen here.
Yeah, and I with Gilmore, I do think that if you don't have a good read on him re-signing, I say this is a cop out, and it's obvious, of course, but I think if they lose this game on Sunday, sell, because now you're 2-5, you're 3 behind the Bills in the loss column, and they're 1-0 against you.
Yeah, that's just math. It's just math at that point. It's like what chances do you have?
But if you win that game. And keep in mind, you have expanded playoffs now this year, where 7 teams get in instead of 6. Maybe you slide in, and maybe you make some noise.
Then, you got to go 6-3, and if they lose this weekend, they got to go 6-3 in their last 9 games.
Yes, I don't
to get to 8-8.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Like... Yeah, so this truly is sort of a do or die weekend for them, and I think this should be what they do in terms of the market and how they move it. With Gilmore, with talking about the compensatory third, yeah, if you could get 2/3 or a third and a fifth, yeah, that's more draft capital.
They could get more than that. They could get a second. I don't think they can get a first round pick for a 30-year-old cornerback, but they could get a second. They should be able to.
I'm putting you on the spot here, but what's a team that would make sense for you? What team do you think could really use a Stephon Gilmore on their defense?
Because Seattle could use him.
I would say Seattle, but the other idea I have, and I don't know if this is something that's just crazy to think about because of who they are and where they play, why not send him back to Buffalo? Right? If Buffalo's in, you know, like that's something that if you can get them to give you a pick, the only problem is if he stays there, you know, on a deal. But then again, Revis went back to New York. They didn't care about that.
I'd say Bill might want to spite Gilmore, so maybe he sends him to the Falcons or the Jets, just send him to an absolute crap team. He'd be like, yeah, have fun with that. You're demanding money. Yeah. Enjoy the garbage.
I wouldn't.
You're playing in a dumpster now. So
I'm trying to think, like, who would make the most sense? Like, who's a contender that would theoretically need help? I mean, yeah,
Seattle.
To your point, Seattle, they've allowed the most passing yards per game in the NFL.
Yeah.
Through the first, you know, half of the season.
They've been a trade partner, you know.
There's Cleveland. What about Cleveland? Does that make sense?
That would be hilarious. He just does the Jamie Collins deal all over again.
Yeah.
What happened with Collins is he traded him for the compensatory third round pick that they were going to get anyway. So that was Bill just saying, we're just getting rid of this guy.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like he needs to make a move like that. I feel like that he needs to send a message to the guys like, this isn't good enough. This guy was out to lunch and we're going to be better with you guys because you're focused and you're engaged. And you're taking the coaching, and you're not. Then these other guys like J.C. Jackson, they have no leverage. Like Gilmore is going to get another contract most likely, like another like lucrative one. Maybe not for more than like 3 or 4 years, but he's going to get another big deal as a 2-time All Pro Defensive Player of the Year and all that. He just wasn't going to get it here.
Yeah, and which is how it goes.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. And
I think honestly, Gilmore should be happy he even got that first contract because that was like one of the more surprising things that Bill ever did. No, they don't ever make moves like that.
Yeah, that's why I find it. I mean, I shouldn't because I understand the pride element of it. But when guys aren't surprised to get paid here, I'm always like, have you paid attention the last, I don't know, 20 years and how this operation tends to roll? It's never personal. It's just how they operate. You know, it's just and. They've been able to skate by it because they've had fantastic players who've taken left. Yeah, who've taken less. But now it's like that might be on a collision course here where they may have to hit a point where they pay some of these guys or it's going to actually hurt their team.
Let's take a quick 15-second break and we'll be right back. Yeah, I mean, just based on, I've had conversations with, perhaps people that have played for Bill Belichick. That he might not have that kind of cachet anymore without Tom Brady because the quarterbacks are no longer covering up for the team's flaws and there's not that level of confidence that the quarterback will dig you out of whatever hole you might be in and the quarterback might not necessarily be buying in the way Tom Brady always did. Now he has to rely on guys like Matt Slater, David Andrews, Devin McCourty to spread his message. And are they going to listen to those guys like they would to Tom Brady? I don't know.
Right. That's a valid point. I mean, it's not.
Bill has been able to run the team the way he has in the last 20 years because he had Tom Brady. I think that's fair to say at this point.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And now you're watching Brady, you know, with an offense galore down in Tampa Bay that just added Antonio Brown. And that's
bizarre obvious. Though. That's just bizarre.
Isn't it?
Having Robbins reach out to him. It's like, it's just getting weird the way he wants to reform Antonio Brown. And like, I don't know. Like, does he think he's Jesus? Like, it's just getting odd.
And he also shared that thing about, he shared that blatantly false information on his Instagram the other day, Tom Brady did, saying more people have died. He said more people have died from suicide than COVID. And it's like, no,
really?
that's not true. Yeah.
He's a COVID truther? I didn't know that. Well, I know he had those practices.
I don't know if he's becoming one or not, but he shared a thing that said, it said more people have died from suicide than from COVID.
Well, is that not, that's not true? I thought there were a lot of suicides.
I mean, in the last 6 months, I can't see that being the case. That would because the suicide rates would have to be historically high. And
well, I thought it was like millions of people every year.
Yeah, but I don't think that if you do it over the last 6 months, it got debunked though.
I am absolutely talking out of my ass.
One of the independent.
I'm saying suicide is a problem.
Yes. Oh yes. 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 I don't know. I don't know what his new foray, you know, into this side of his personality is. But I will tell you this: I don't like it because I think Antonio Brown is a legit bad person, and he's exposed himself as a bad person on countless occasions. And it's frustrating for me as a Patriots fan that he was more willing to work with Antonio Brown after he's done all this shit than deal with Jacoby Myers being a rookie wide receiver.
As being a Wookiee.
As being a Wookiee. As being a rookie wide receiver. then he was more willing to work with this absolute piece of garbage than the rookies, whose only fault was they were young. It's that part is frustrating to me. That is, he's not willing to work with them, but Antonio Brown is cool.
No, yeah, he made them get Josh Gordon. He made them get Mohamed Sanu. He made them get Demaryius Thomas. He's lost his patience for working with younger receivers. Like, minimum, you got to have minimum 3 years in the league. Like, I don't know how long Chris Godwin has been in the NFL, but like, and I think it goes back to the coach too. He was on his, he did his Jim Gray interview, and he was talking glowingly about Bruce Arians and how he's this brilliant offensive mind and all that. And he's really appreciative of all the insight and the help that he's getting from Bruce Arians. So, I mean, obviously Bill Belichick was just spitting in his face the last couple of years, apparently, like the way he's been acting. And like, he just wanted out of, he just wanted out from the whole Belichick experience, which is too bad. It's too bad. It's too bad they couldn't figure it out for just a few more years. But I don't know. I don't think the book's closed on either team either. Cause it's like 3 weeks ago, we were talking about a Tom Brady couldn't count to four. And we were wondering, like, where the Bucs were going to go from here. And when the Patriots had a couple moral victories in Seattle and Kansas City, and they had a good game plan in Kansas City. It's just their quarterback completely crapped himself once he got into the red zone. But, like, between the 20s, the offense looked fine. They got into the red zone, and then just Brian Hoyer completely crapped the bed. And they brought in Stidham probably a little too late. He wasn't great either, but he at least threw a touchdown. And, I don't know. I think there's still a chance. I still believe in Bill, and just still believe that he can regain control of the locker room and the whole operation. And I believe that Cam Newton can turn it around. I just think the way they've been trying to go about running the offense is clearly completely out of whack.
Yeah, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place here, and I know the Patriots are as well, because part of me wants this organizational reset where you're giving roles to these younger players. The other part of me says you've almost committed too much to a veteran group. Again, the McCourtys, the Edelmans, the Newtons, that it almost seems like you can't at the same time unless you make 10 trades between now and November 3rd, which is not likely. So it is an odd time. And I do think that the Bills have been trying to piss away games. You know, and as frustrating as
a little lately.
Yeah, they lose to the Titans, who didn't play for like a month. They lose to the Chiefs. Well, obviously, you almost expect that given how good the Chiefs are. And then they tried losing to the Jets over the weekend. So it feels as if you're right there, you know. And if you can win some of these winnable games, the Denver game looming so large right now. But if you can win these games, and if you can win on Sunday, I don't want to throw in the towel just yet. I don't want to do it. It's such a weird spot they find themselves in right now.
It's just, yeah, very, very concerning that there was no – that they went further in the opposite direction of where we were expecting. Everyone was going into that San Francisco game saying, oh, it's the Patriots. They'll respond. This is usually a time where they rise up. Yeah, when they had number 12 here, that was the time they would rise up. Now it's not looking the same with Cam Newton in there. I'm very concerned that Cam Newton's whole history of sort of going in the tank and sort of spiraling when things start to go bad, and like only looking good when things, and like really riding high when things are going good. Like, I feel like that's sort of that's sort of like, you know, by osmosis infecting the rest of the team, which is quite unfortunate. I think the fact that the resilience of the Patriots in the Tom Brady era, that trickled down from Brady, because Brady would never give up. He would play 60 minutes, and he would always have that confidence. He would get him back in the game. Different team with a completely different player, different personality and all that under center. So, I mean, I don't know. It might be on Cam to turn it around. But he's got to play better in Buffalo, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, and you talk about the confidence boost. I mean, this game is the season. It really is. I mean, it's the confidence boost. If he wins this game, you're going to say, wow, that's a building block right there. If they lose, all right, it's over. Like, turn up the lights, party's over. Let's all go home. Yeah. I mean, it's a real thing. So, this really is feast or famine right now for this team, it feels like. And I think that's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking for, you know, the fans and us that want to watch meaningful ball, want to talk about meaningful football. We haven't been in this situation since we were kids, basically, right? If they lose this game, I mean, even if they missed the playoffs, they were, what, 11-5? I mean, it's just it's crazy.
I wouldn't describe it as a fun or, like, enjoyable, but it's a little more compelling that now every week we don't know what the hell's going to happen. Because how many years, and there's people that are, like, you know, teenagers who didn't know anything but Tom Brady and didn't know anything but we're going to beat the crap out of every bad team. And if we lose to a bad team, it would happen like once every 5 years. It would be a completely shocking event. And we're going to win 12 games. We'll see you in the AFC Championship game. Obviously, it's completely different now. But it's a little more compelling not knowing what's going to happen. And like we're going to be on the edge of our seat every week now, it seems.
Yeah,
in a way, I don't know. I don't want to say it's more fun, but I think the uncertainty makes it a little more interesting.
It's in line with what we've talked
about. How many times
were
these games that weren't interesting because we just knew what was going to happen? We knew the Patriots. And, yeah, it's fun to watch Tom Brady light it up all these years and wins all those games, but the game was rarely in the balance. You had to wait until the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl for the game to be in the balance. Now it feels like it's going to be in the balance every week. So I think you got to dig your heels in and just grit your teeth and get ready for the ride. Strap in. Because I think if you're one of these fans that's like, you know, throwing a tantrum, it's like they suck now, I will not watch. It's like, well, then you're being a fair weather fan if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. Real fans are not going to jump ship to Tampa. Real fans are not going to turn off their TVs. Real fans are not going to turn their back on the team. You know, you're going to keep rooting for the team and hope that they turn it around. And just because they're not good right now, and just because there might be a period of time where they're not good and they're not competing for Super Bowls, doesn't mean the world's over. You know, I know I'm talking to a lot of young fans right now. I know you're not used to this, but this is what most teams in the NFL go through, and this is what we're in right now. And I still think there's a chance that because of Belichick and because of that veteran leadership that they can right the ship, as David Andrews said earlier today on Zolak and Bertrand. I still think they can right the ship, but it's going to be way more of a challenge because they lack talent compared to last year, and they don't have a quarterback that's exactly going to make up for the flaws as much as they used to. So,
step one, you call the Miami Dolphins and you say, give us Fitzmagic, baby. You need that Fitzmagic in New England now. He needs a complete tour of the AFC East. This is what needs to happen.
That would be hilarious.
It'd be great, right? No, I'm not saying actually do that. I'm just saying that is an option.
It's looking like I would have rather taken him than Cam Newton.
I know.
He was going to have that hot start.
I mean, looking back on it, man, it's you know, I think a lot of us jumped the gun after that Seattle game, and I would say arguably rightfully so, but – but it looks like that was a sort of the high, maybe, you know, between Edelman's connection with him and how he looked, that may have been the high. I thought that was the start of something special, and maybe it still can be if he gets his conditioning back, he gets his mind back, as you talked about. But if not, I mean, we're all going to look really stupid for that, and myself included, for believing in that one game.
I think we all said that, but this is why I'm not writing them off, and I'm not penciling in the Bucks for a Super Bowl either. Bruce Arians is not the sharpest head coach. He's a fine. He can scheme an offense, and they'll score points, but situational stuff and like just the clock management and like the head coach stuff, he's never been great at it. And so, like, what we assumed is because he has Tom Brady that they're going to win a bunch of games, but when it comes down to crunch time in a playoff game, is he going to make the right decisions? Is he going to manage the end of the game right? Are they going to be prepared? Are they going to be prepared defensively? Like, I'm not ruling out that the Bucks sort of, you know, come a little bit back to earth after like going into the stratosphere the last couple weeks. And I'm not ruling out the Patriots are going to turn around. They've had slow starts like this before. Obviously, 2-4 and a 3-game losing streak is sort of uncharted territory. But it's obviously different. It's obviously different with the quarterback situation, and it's just been bad lately. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to rule it out. I like to react to what's happening in front of me without making these like sweeping long-term judgments. One thing that we love to do for whatever reason as fans and media here in New England is that like something bad happens. Oh, they're screwed. It's all over. They're not going to win this year. They suck. And you know, they win or they get a moral victory and it's oh, okay. Super Bowl back on. It's like, I just feel like it's so overreactionary. I know it's, you know, boring thing to say. Like, no, you got to have a reaction. You got to have a take. But it's like, we could say that they're bad right now and they're playing poorly right now without totally writing off the season. But yeah. I get if they lose to Buffalo, then the 2-5 is going to be tough to come back from. But it's not over yet. If they win in Buffalo, then they probably beat the Jets and they're 4-4. And let's see what happens.
Exactly. But yeah, to your point, everything is, that's how it is now. Everything's either the worst or the greatest. There's no in between. And that part is frustrating. I have a story coming out later today that kind of touches on that with the Boston Bruins. But yeah, that's it's just not reality, right? Some things can be just in the middle. And right now the Patriots may be in the middle. And how do they work their way upward or do they fall downward? I think that's something worth watching these next 2 weeks here. And we're going to get our answer one way or the other. We're going to get our answer. They're going to be 4-4 or they're going to be 3-5. And we're going to have these same concerns, these same questions. But yeah, to your point, I can't worry about what's going to happen at the end of week 17, 18, or 19, whatever happens with this COVID thing. I just need to worry. You need to worry about Sunday against the Bills. And I think that they could win given the way Buffalo's been trying to piss away games, but it's going to take the best effort they've had all season, probably better than the Seattle effort, I would say.
I hope so. All I ask of fans is that you keep watching, stay engaged, keep following your football team. Don't turn your back over a few bad games or even just like what could be one bad season. It's just like, don't be a spoiled brat. We've been very spoiled over the last 20 years. Now we're a little closer to the reality of most cities and teams in sports. Just strap in. Just watch the games. And you give your take and reaction. You could be mad. You could be mad. Just please don't act like a spoiled baby. It's gonna look bad for us. Everyone's looking at us like, huh, you can't handle a few losses. Like after all that winning you had, like you're just gonna completely throw a tantrum over a couple bad games. You can't do it. Can't let it happen. I go back to when Tom Brady left back in March. It's like, oh, I can't believe he's gone. Oh, he's leaving. I can't believe it's over. Get it together. Never. Be an adult.
Never.
It's fine. Life goes on. Not a lot of bad stuff has happened since then across the country. And
yeah, I was ahead of the – I was saying, no, he can't leave because he's a sorcerer and it's going to open up a portal to hell. And look what happened. Portal to hell has been opened. It's been opened. And it's all his fault.
Tampa's winning in every sport. Isn't that crazy how he has that aura? He just goes to Tampa and the whole city starts winning championships.
I'm so happy the Rays lost because of that. You have no idea. That brought me the most joy, besides the fact that
– I'm glad that the analytics nerds got it shoved.
Yeah, I hate the way the Rays play. I hate it. It's not a fun brand of baseball to watch. I hate openers. I despise pulling pitchers in the fourth inning. It's a painful way to watch the game, and their success would have been copycatted throughout the league and still might be, and that would be the worst thing for baseball in 2021 and moving forward.
Terrible. But it's terrible.
Baseball may not even survive. They're apparently billions of dollars in debt, so that's a lot of fun to notice.
They're billions somehow of dollars in debt, and their commissioner is having a stroke live on TV. I don't know if you heard Rob Manfred last night. He did not sound good.
That was like Tim Robinson. That was like a Tim Robinson I think you should leave sketch, the way he was talking.
Yeah, we're going to find the man who did this in his hot dog outfit.
Yeah, I mean, that was odd. And it hit the point where I was like, dude, is he okay?
I hope he was just like hammered. You know,
everyone said that.
The slurring of the speech is what it sounded like.
Fine. So it's like, all right, well, then he's just drunk then. Whatever. It's the last game of the season. Maybe the last day of him on the job, honestly. So he's like, "Yeah, whatever. I'm gonna have a few Chardonnays. What of it? You know. So why not?"
I'm just glad the nerds got one handed to them last night. It's just, I'm so sick. Like, I think the Dodgers definitely use some analytics in the way they evaluate and build their team.
Of course, of course. course. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they just proved that what you need at the end of the day is talent. You don't need a bunch of math problems and like guys just going up, reading off the stat sheet to figure out what the hell to do. And you need to have a feel for the game, and you need to have talent that's going to play well and come up big in big situations. And guess who was coming up big in a big situation last night? Blake Snell. And who got in the way? The computers. So screw you guys. I'm just sick of the smug, sanctimonious attitude like a lot of these analytics guys have. It's like you can't go out there and say, like, you know, analytics isn't perfect. There's got to be some kind of human element involved at some point. You can't just like do everything based off analytics, and then they just the response is like, you're dumb. Yeah, well, you're an idiot. It's like, yeah, you lost. So I mean, all right, you can be. Fine, you can be the smart stack guy who loses in the end. That's like, I'm just so sick of the attitude of the analytics people. Hockey too. It's like, I get it. Some of it makes sense, and it's good to use, and it's a good tool, and it tells you like a deeper story than just looking at like flawed stats like a plus minus or something like that. And I'm not saying like baseball, you should just go by batting average. Like you can use analytics. Like I don't think WAR is totally useless, but like, I'm sick of it being the end all be all. And I'm glad it took a hit last night. I hope teams watched that and realized, you know, sometimes just leave in the guy that's pitching well. You don't have to be like, well, you know, the numbers say, just put the numbers away once in your life. And maybe they would have come out on top. Maybe they would have won that game 1-0 if they left Blake Snell in the whole time.
Yeah, he was one of the like I read the stat and I gotta verify it. I'm probably gonna butcher it right now, but he was like the first pitcher to have 9 strikeouts through 4 innings in an elimination game or a World Series game or whatever since Sandy Koufax.
And he was dominating.
You pull him. It's like what are you doing? And yeah, to your point,
I'm allowed to face the lineup for a third time. Oh boy, yeah, you got lost anyway. So.
And what you
immediately
need,
coughed up the lead.
Yeah, and the truth is to your point, it's somewhere in the middle, right? It's somewhere where you use the data that you have, but you also have a human feel for the game, and you make calls based on that. And I think Roberts sort of embodies that. You know, I think Dave Roberts, you know, he has his notebook, he has his charts on the wall of the hot zones and where guys should be swinging.
Right. He's an actual baseball lifer. He's not like this one of these Yale guys like Chaim Bloom. You know, just like. Just like those stats.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, like Billy Beane, meanwhile, he's like the godfather of the, you know, modern sabermetrics, and he's considered one of the most genius stat guys ever. Guys never won a damn thing.
Yes.
And meanwhile, the Red Sox have won 4 World Series. I know they haven't been the best run organization overall, but they've won 4 World Series based on having having high end talent and coming up big in October. I feel like analytics didn't have a ton to do with their World Series wins, to be honest. I put a hot take out there on Twitter today, and I'm surprised I didn't get ratioed as hard as I was expecting.
Oh, what'd you say?
I don't think the book's closed on the Mookie Betts thing. Everyone's dancing on the Red Sox grave last night because Mookie has won a World Series with the Dodgers. It's like, yeah, sure. One for this 1 year, huge win for Mookie. The Red Sox were terrible. Terrible, terrible year for the Red Sox. And I'm not saying the trade was good either. I think it was probably going to turn out to be a bad trade for them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that signing into that contract would necessarily have been a good idea. If the Red Sox, if he ultimately decided to stay here, I would have been like, oh, great. Well, we're going to keep Mookie Betts through his prime. But I don't know what's going to happen when he's 30, 31 years old. Like, he's not a guy. He's 5'9", 180. He's not a guy who physically is built to withstand this high-end performance, you know, well into his 30s. I look at Andrew McCutchen is the example that I like to point to all the time. He was arguably the best all-around player in baseball in his prime. He was one of the best players in baseball. He's a great hitter, great defensive player, and he deserved to get paid and all that. But he hit 30, and he basically fell off a cliff. And he's been like a stiff for several years now. And I'm not ruling out that that's going to happen with Mookie Betts. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that. And, like, say 5 years from now, The Dodgers haven't won another World Series. Mookie Betts is making $35 million to bat 250 with like, you know, 20 home runs and 60 RBI. And he's not delivering the best WAR in baseball like he usually does. And meanwhile, the Red Sox have bought their way back into contention, and now they're playing for a World Series. And what if they win a World Series in the next 5 years and the Dodgers don't? Are the Red Sox still stupid?
Well, I think, and watching this World Series, watching,
I get it. Dodgers, you don't want to trade a superstar. You don't want.
I didn't want them
to trade him necessarily.
The problem for me will always be the return, because the return, they didn't get a single one of these LA pitchers, who are pretty damn good. It turns out that even Grayroll, I would have taken him in that deal, but they reversed course since they didn't want him. And you look at the guys that the Red Sox put out this year, and you're like, ugh, any single guy you could have gotten from the Dodgers to help pitching either rotation-wise or in the bullpen, they should have done that, and they didn't. That's where the trade is a failure for me, because organizationally, I don't think the Red Sox have much pitching. They have Jay Groom, who they took with the first-round pick. He's kicking around. I think they have another pitcher as well. The name escaped me right now. But that's the need. I think if you're going to say we're going to trade this guy who's a lock for 30 home runs and he's a five-tool player, you need to refocus what you're going to be, and that's pitching. And they didn't get a single pitcher in that deal. That's so frustrating to me.
That is crazy.
They didn't get any of those guys.
It is crazy. They couldn't get anybody who pitched worth a lick. And they haven't – meanwhile, the Clay Buchholz is the last homegrown pitcher that they've brought up through the system and been even like remotely good, which is just crazy to think about. I don't know what the hell happened to the whole evaluation department. And this is a team that uses analytics as much as any team in the league. So, I mean, how's that working out for you so far?
Yeah, exactly. And that – so that's where that bothers me, you know, seeing all these bums that they brought in this year to pitch. And legit double-A arms, honestly. Like, just not major league quality pitching. It was embarrassing. And so the fact you didn't get any of those guys, you got Verdugo, who I think is good, honestly.
Going to take another quick break here, 15 seconds, and we're right back. Verdugo's going to be a really good player, I think. He's not going to be a superstar, but he's got a chance to be like a legit piece of a championship type of team. I think he's like a competitor.
Yeah,
he feels like a ball, like a real baller. You know, it's a cliche, but like he feels like a guy that would be a good piece of a championship team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you gotta get the high end talent around him now. But
yeah, and
I don't know. I just don't think
Jeter Downs, whatever.
I just think it's a mistake to act like it's all over now. Now if the Dodgers win the next three World Series in a row, then it'll look really, really, really bad. And then you could say that I was wrong. But I don't know. The Dodgers were the lovable losers up until last night. Like, we're just going to assume that now they're going to win four World Series in a row. And we're going to assume that Mookie Betts is going to be a superstar well into his 30s over the course of that contract. I just don't I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not going to assume that. And I know the Red Sox are a bipolar organization. Their last 1 year, they're winning the World Series the next year. But I don't see why they couldn't be back in contention in a couple of years. You never know. They'll probably buy a free agent at somewhere or trade for someone and then give him a deal. They'll make some moves. I think they had to take this one year battering ram straight to the face to sort of reset. But you know, even Tom Warner, who I don't love as an exec, but Tom Warner says we'll be back. Meaning we're going to be back spending, and we just needed to reset. We need to get rid of David Price's contract, and it sucks that they had to get rid of Mookie for that. But I'm just not going to assume that the Dodgers are now going to shove it up the Mookie's going to shove it to the Red Sox for the whole rest of his career. Like, I feel like in 5 years we could be saying, well, Mookie's really dropped off, and you know the Red Sox are back in it. I just want to see what happens.
Yeah, what I will say is this, though, is that every time the Red Sox decide they don't want to spend money on somebody, they give it about 2 years and they go out and spend it on someone who's not as good. And
yeah, they have no long-term vision. Their long-term vision is just outrageously bad.
Yeah, so. And with Tom Warner saying that deal might not age well, good for Tom Warner. This is the same guy who brought Roseanne back So I really don't want to hear his thoughts on
what he's going to do. We need to start winning in more exciting ways. All right, we'll sign Carl Crawford. Yay, good contracts.
I don't want to hear what this guy has to say about aging well, honestly. This guy's best idea was to bring Roseanne Barr back to network television.
He produced the Cosby Show.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I trust him.
I'm not sure he's the best judge of character.
No, but I do think, though, that if you're the Red Sox, you're one of the five teams that could sign Mookie Betts to that kind of contract, and you didn't. So you got to live with that, and you got to hope that the guys you got turn out to be good players. I think you didn't get enough on the return. I think you dilly-dallied on the return for a long time, and that part of it's frustrating. It was a miscalculation, in my opinion, and we'll see if they're right or not. But I'll tell you what, I loved the fact that Mookie just shoved up their ass in year one. I love that because I don't like this ownership group.
I'm not trying to be anti-Mookie. I love that Mookie played well in the World Series and got a ring. I'm glad that
I think they should sell the team. I firmly believe that. So anytime this ownership has a chance to get thrown in the mud, I'm happy because I don't think they identify with Boston. I don't think that they identify with the fan base. I think that they look at the fan base as a cash cow. They don't. And I mean, hey, I guess all owners do, but this group is especially bad, in my opinion. I think they're a terrible ownership group. They talk about the financial flexibility, and then what do? They lay off 10% of their full-time employees this year. So it's like, all right, well, the financial flexibility didn't prevent these, you know, poor people making $60,000 a year from losing their jobs because John Henry, you know, needs to buy another $80 million yacht. They're a detestable organization. It's impossible to root for them. So anytime they lose, I'm happy.
Well, that being said, I want them to be good again.
No.
I want to be. They were my first love in sports. I know you hate baseball. But based on what I've heard and what's been reported, I mean, like, Mookie just didn't want to stay in Boston. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you have an idea why that might be?
Yeah. It's one of the names on my checks. No, I'm just kidding. Let's be real. This is a tough media landscape, right? Not for everybody. I think that LA is sort of, you talked about this yesterday. It's kind of the best of both worlds. We have an elite sports team and a media market that's going to be pretty chill, I think, for the most part. So maybe he wasn't built to play here. I think that, you know, the noise here can be a problem for guys. I know it's been a problem for guys.
Right. This is where, like, I think we, just as a collective media, not anyone in particular, there's a lot of people in the media out there that make a lot of noise. But I think the media and a lot of fans on social media, the fans that sort of repeat what they hear in the media, or they're just assholes, I think it does affect players. And, I mean, blame the players all you want. But, like, would you want to deal with a bunch of loudmouth a-holes screaming at you on Twitter all day? And would you want to deal – and turn it off to just get off Twitter. But then you – but and it's not like they're listening to us and they're listening to the radio and they're watching the TV shows and just listening to what is being said. But they have friends and family who are, and they're going to relay what's being said about them. And, like, would you want to deal with that all the time? Like, it gets to these guys. The word gets to them. It takes a certain kind of player to survive the intensity of a market like this, just from the whole collective experience. And I think social media has made it worse. And it's just like a guy like David Price was never going to survive here. And I mean, you can blame him if you want, but like it just takes a certain kind of guy. I feel like Chris Sale, not a perfect example because he hasn't played well in the postseason. But that's a guy who doesn't seem to care what anyone thinks, and he doesn't use social media or anything like that. And he has played well a lot. The question, I think, it's more of a physical thing with him. Like, I don't know if that physically he can last a full season all the way into October playing at a high level. But like attitude wise, like you need guys like that to play well and win here, which is tough. It's tough, but I mean, it's the reality. Like guys are. A lot of younger athletes these days, generation, they're sensitive to what's being said about them. They're sensitive to what's being said on social media. And why deal with that, plus the cold weather and the ugly people, when you could go out to LA where the people are all beautiful, the weather is perfect, and the fans and media don't really care if you lose. Mm-hmm. and they'll celebrate if you win, but they won't rip you if you have a bad game.
And you don't have to sit in LA is not true. I was going to say, you don't have to sit in an hour of traffic to go 10 miles, but that's LA. So
yeah, I mean, guys aren't exactly lining up to play in New York either, or Philadelphia. It might just be like a Northeast thing. The weather's bad. Everybody's an a-hole. And you got to deal with all this intensity. The fans will boo you if you don't play well. And it's like, fine, we're passionate. You can excuse that away as we're passionate. But at the end of the day, like, you're not just going to – we're not exactly helping ourselves attract a star player to like want to play here.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I just think that, you know, all to your point, you talked about this. I know that players have friends and family who screenshot every snarky tweet that's said about them. And they send it to the player after a game that they'll say, yeah, hey, see what so-and-so is saying about you. And
yeah, it's not accurate to say like, oh, he's not listening. He's not listening to the Sports Hub. What do you think? He's listening to the Sports Hub? No, but people are, and he's going to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not saying
you got to be nice. I'm just saying it's the reality.
Yeah, for me,
Kevin Durant would never survive here.
No, he wouldn't.
That would be a disaster. Amazing player.
His burners would be outed in 5 minutes.
Amazing player, but he'd be a disaster with the way he would handle everything being said about him.
No, I would agree with that. But then you have guys like I do wonder about like certain guys, but then there are other guys that I think, like, if we're sticking with basketball, part of me wonders about Jason Tatum, if he wants to be a part of that.
I'm worried about Tatum too.
The other part of me looks at Jaylen Brown and says, he's built for this. He can handle this.
I think Jaylen Brown can handle it, yeah.
But I do wonder, yeah, it's difficult and I'm not going to say, hey, we should be softer or, hey, the fans shouldn't be vocal. Like, no, everyone's allowed to do whatever the hell they want to do. But I do think that we need to stop being so damn surprised if players decide, no, I don't want to be a part of that. I mean, think about, and this is such a minuscule example compared to someone like Mookie Betts, but think about Jimmy Hayes, right? The guy grows up in Boston, loves the Bruins, loves the city. He comes here. Doesn't work out, and now everyone in his own hometown makes fun of him. You know what I mean? Like that's a tough thing to do. I mean, can you imagine being a superstar though, and coming right here and you don't pan out? Now one of the greatest sports cities in America thinks you're a bum, and they're going to tell you that for the rest of your life.
Imagine Jack Eichel has been playing here his whole career, and they hadn't won a cup yet. He would be hearing it,
right?
You know.
I mean, yeah, and that part of it is just, I think that's a tougher mental aspect, mental grind than people understand.
Have to have a mentality of a guy like David Ortiz who just didn't care what anyone said. And if anything, he would just push back and then show up on the field and shove the bat up to Keister on game day. And like, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's not many guys like that anymore.
Yeah. No,
which is why now we're starting to see, this is sort of a conspiracy theory, I guess, but that's sort of why we're starting to see cities like LA and now Tampa, and like the softer markets like that are starting to win because there's nothing really to worry about. They can just go to work. At the end of the day, these guys are professionals, and I'm not going to like fault a guy for not wanting to just be totally motivated to nothing but winning. You know, it's like Tom Brady was obviously a different cat. He didn't care. I mean, like he sort of cared what people were saying about him, like what Alex Reimer said about his daughter in the last couple of years here. But he didn't care about anything but winning football games. And so, I mean, I guess you're going to target a guy like that. But to get a guy who has that attitude and he's a superstar talent, that's the rarest of the rare. Someone like Tom Brady or David Ortiz or even Pedro Martinez is just the rarest of the rare.
Kevin Garnett.
I think that's what you need. I think Kevin Garnett. I think we have to hope that Jaylen Brown sort of turns into their version of, you know, Giannis or Kawhi Leonard or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, just that caliber of talent. Because I'm starting to get worried that Jason Tatum's not going to want to deal with this.
Yeah,
like, guys like Kyrie Irving are getting in his ear.
Yeah,
Al Horford couldn't deal with it. Got guys saying, talking about how average he is all the time, and his sister's probably telling him everything that everybody says about him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, F this. Dude went to Philadelphia over Boston, which I imagine the fans aren't any nicer out there.
No, especially the Sixers fans. Oh my God, they're miserable. Yeah. They're very angry and understandably so.
And I get that most of the Celtics media isn't that like hard on the team, but social media is an absolute cesspool for everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, you've heard some of the horror stories from some of the players involved. I know Marcus Smart had that story recently where he talked about how someone called him the N-word, and you know, he said that person didn't look at me as a person. Looked at me like I was, you know, entertain. Like I was just there to entertain them.
Yeah.
And that's not to say the whole fan base like that. Obviously, of course not. But it's just like it's a rough experience being a pro athlete in general. Now you add a rabid fan base into it, and some guys are going to say, "I don't want to do that." Maybe Mookie's that guy, but I do think his comments the other day are kind of telling. Where he said he thought he was going to be a Red Sox for life. That obviously didn't pan out, but you wonder what happened along the way to make that the case, right? Was it just the money, or was it just the, you know, being there for a few years and going, oh my God, this, I don't think I want to be here for 20 years. You know, you truly wonder what his reasoning was. I mean, he's going to keep it to himself, I would imagine. But it is worth wondering that if the climate here was a little bit too tough for him. And if that's the case, then yeah, you probably don't want to give him $400 million to stay here.
Yeah. I think it's just, I feel like we all, myself included, I don't want to act like I'm calling anyone out and I'm better than anyone. But like, I just feel like we need to understand that what we say can have an effect on these guys. And you might just have to accept that if you're not going to, I'm not saying you need to be nicer, you need to change, but you have to accept that these guys aren't going to change. And you have to take a certain kind of guy here. Or else, like, we're not going to be bringing in premium talents. It has to be a premium talent who can also handle this whole grind. And I feel like those guys are sort of becoming more and more, not extinct, but they're just becoming, there's less and less of those guys as time goes along. I think that's why we're starting to see these other markets, you know, bring in all the stars. I mean, the Lakers have obviously always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, Miami.
The dumbest take I saw out of all of this, though, last night was definitely somebody, I think they were a Lakers fan, so whatever. But they tweeted, it was like the handshake, you know, it was the two handshaking meme where it said the Red Sox and the Celtics, and it said not doing everything you can to acquire generational talent. And I think they were talking about Anthony Davis, and it's like, yeah, they weren't going to trade Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis. Yeah, that's a smart move, you idiot. That's such a weird way to frame that argument. You know, the Mookie Betts trade and the Anthony Davis trade are so different in context that it's just like it's funny to see how the argument's going to be reframed over the years. I can't wait for that part of it.
And again, look in the mirror. It's like you don't realize you're being an annoying a-hole with that kind of a comment. It's like,
yeah.
And there's probably so many of us that are like that in Boston. I haven't been immune to that myself. I've probably said some things that the players haven't liked, but.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. You gotta be a certain kind of guy. And unfortunately, I think that's sort of going by the wayside, and guys are more interested in, I'll get paid and the fans won't be complete dicks to me all the time. The media won't rip me all the time and I'll win a World Series. That's basically what Mookie Betts just said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think the whole book is closed long-term on how he's going to do out there and how the Red Sox are going to do moving forward, but I think it's fair to look at the whole Boston experience and wonder if everyone sort of has their own small little part in making it tough on guys to live here or play here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I can see that. And
I just think it's a cop-out. I just think it's a cop-out to say like, oh, no, it's not because of us. You know, it's not because of the media or the fans. No. Like, I feel like that's absolutely a factor.
They listen, they read, they watch, they do it all. I'll never forget, I was on the NHL Network, and the first thing I did when I got off the air is Bruce Cassidy walked by me and goes, hey, I just watched that, good spot. And I was like, oh, God, you're watching? It was an hour before a playoff game. You're watching? So, you know, that's it's a real thing. They pay attention. So if any young writers or podcasters or whatever are listening right now, keep in mind, people are always seeing what you're saying, so. Be prepared to have to answer for it if you say something, negative about a star player. Some guys aren't afraid to go up to you and say, hey, why the hell did you say that?
Exactly. Like Brad Marchand is another guy where I'd say is a different kind of person where he can handle all the stuff being said and he'll snap back at times too. But he went out there and he was probably their best player in the playoffs, at least in that Tampa series. So
yeah, he answered for a lot of the talk that he's had over the years or the criticisms that he's had of people. I thought he was their best player in the playoffs. Yeah, he knows how to do it. He knows. I think him and Chris Sale are kind of similar in the sense that sometimes I think they get themselves too jacked up for a moment. And that can sometimes be a problem as well. But overall, yeah, he's mastered the art of playing in Boston, in my opinion.
Yeah. And so, like, I feel like those guys are sort of few and far between. We have to hope that Jason Tatum is one of those guys. Doesn't feel great right now. And I was joking before, like, yeah, he just walks out the door. He just never win anything. He just leaves. He just goes to L.A. It's like, oh, that'll be an easy one to swallow when that happens.
I really hope it doesn't happen.
Have we tried having better weather?
I'd love that.
Can we start getting some of these models and start importing them into Boston, please?
That'd be great, too. We can try that. Let's try it all. You know what? Let's consider everything here.
Be nicer. Stop being an a-hole.
Well, let's not go that far now. Let's.
All right. You can keep being an a-hole. Fine.
Now. Let's not get too crazy.
No.
I don't know. I'm happy. Let me say this though. I know we're running long here. I'm so happy that, or I'm hopeful. I shouldn't say happy because we live in hell. I'm so hopeful that this is the end of the COVID championship. I'm praying and I'm hoping this is the end of it because, oh my God, these are so lackluster. It's painful.
You're saying hopefully no more bubbles after this and no more empty stadiums?
Please, no more bubbles. Please, no more empty stadiums. The Dodgers ending a 32-year drought should have been a lot cooler than it was. The Lightning finally overcoming the hill, you know, getting over that mountain, it should have been a bigger thing. Same thing with the Lakers winning with LeBron and AD. It hasn't had any energy, any juice. It's just been these really sort of just very just boring, bland ceremonies and post games. There's no energy from the crowds.
Yeah, it's not the same without the energy of the fans.
Yeah, it just I'm really hoping this is the end of that. And I don't want to say that these are not real championships. I'm not going that far, but they don't feel like real championships. You know what I mean? Like there's something missing. There's an element missing. And it's been really difficult for me to invest my energy and truly care about the results because I just don't feel it. I don't feel like this is the normal sort of playoff, and it's not, but I really want to get fans back in these buildings. I know it's probably not the safest thing to do right now, but I'm really hoping that come 2021, we're crowning champions in some full buildings.
Yeah, but it's like, at the end of the day, if you're a fan and you're worried about catching the virus or spreading the virus, you're going to stay home anyway. Mm-hmm. So, like, why can't we at least partially allow stadiums to let fans back in, people who are willing to take the risk, and they're going to, you know, check your temperature and maybe even get tested or whatever. But, I'm starting to get off board with the whole play. Like, you just have to force everyone to stay home. We just can't open these venues at all. Because I think at the end of the day, the people that are going to be staying home aren't going to be going anyway. If you tell fans they're allowed back in, you're not going to be someone who is afraid of the virus and then all of a sudden, oh, they're letting me back into sports venues, I'll go. Mm-hmm. Like, those people are going to stay home anyway. So why don't we let people who are willing to take the risk go to these games? If you tell them they have to legally quarantine for 3 days afterward, or that sign waivers, or get tested, get their temperature checked, all that stuff. Like, I think we need to start working towards that process because you're completely right. These empty stadiums, it's not the same product, and I feel like interest in sports could wane, and I feel like people's interest in staying inside all the time is going to wane eventually too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously we're seeing it affect the bottom line, right, for these teams where, we talked about the MLB losing money. The NHL is a flat cap. The NBA, I believe, is going with a flat cap as well. And football, I mean, football is such an economy mover, you know, in all these cities. And you know, I'm sure these teams are feeling the effects of having you know, 6,000 people in your 65,000 monstrosity in downtown, it's not working. It's not working financially. So you're going to have to get some of these situations fixed.
And there haven't been issues with the stadiums that are letting fans in, right? I think there was one person at the season opener in Kansas City who tested positive, but there haven't been like a super, there hasn't been a super spreader event at any of these stadiums. It's just, it's been the teams themselves. It hasn't been the fans.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we're opening up a whole new can of worms here. No matter what,
I've already deemed, I'm already an idiot and an a-hole for even bringing it up.
Yeah, it's, I don't understand the concept of, you know, you can go to a shopping mall or a casino, but you can't sit down at a bar. You know, there's just things that don't make a lot of sense to me. They won't. I'm not a scientist, so I won't bother to try to understand them. But I do think that, you know, I would say there's a great likelihood we're going to spend the entire NFL season with an empty Gillette Stadium, based on what's happening right now. And I don't really understand how that can be the case. But again, you can go 15 minutes away. You can go to the Rentham outlets, and you can be there, as you know, walk around that open air facility with as many people as you want. I mean, Black Friday shopping is going to happen. These malls are going to be packed and crowded, but you can't be in a stadium. I don't understand. I just don't understand it. I just I'm not gonna, and so I'm not going to bother to try. But I just know that I don't want another COVID championship. I really don't. These are not entertaining as a sports fan who likes to capture the emotion and the energy of moments. It's been possible.
No, let fans back in. Do limited capacity if you have to. Take all the precautions. Test them. Force people to wear masks. Don't let anybody sit next to each other. And if you're vulnerable or if you're afraid, stay home. And those people are going to be doing that anyway. I don't have to tell anyone to do that. And so I feel like that's something that should be doable. So hopefully that's the step they take. Hopefully that's the direction we take for next season. Because, yeah, I can't do another whole year of this crap.
No, we can't.
All right. Well, I think we can call it that. Good talk. A lot of good sports talk at a time that's not very good for sports in Boston. But I choose to be glass half full. So I'm going to be optimistic that the Red Sox are going to get back into it. The Patriots are going to turn it around. And I mean, I guess we'll see with the Bruins. But I hope that they'll eventually let fans back into stadiums and things like that. Because I don't think you have to stay empty for two whole years. I just think that's a little much. So, any closing thoughts, Ty?
No, I have nothing.
Have you been watching any movies before we get out of here?
No. I watched the new Borat. It was all right.
I thought it was just okay.
It's just, you can't play that character. It's too popular. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the ending is funny. The ending's good, but.
It was a little too serious for my liking.
Yeah.
It wasn't as silly as the first one, so it's like.
The plot was a mess, too. Like, just, yeah. it was all over the place. So.
Yeah, it was a little.
That's okay. But you know, the characters that he did play, I thought were pretty funny. Maybe they're promising for the future. So we'll see if, you know, what happens. But he desperately just needs that new fourth character, who can just capture the absurdity of the moment. No new shows. The only thing I got to say is, I don't know. I got no idea. Just have fun.
Well, that's good and fun. Yeah. Please have fun. Eat an orange.
Yeah.
To try not to get sick and, try to enjoy yourself this Halloween, even though I think like everything got canceled Halloween wise. I don't know. Have your Zoom Halloween parties, dress up, have some candy. And please don't try to stay off social media as much as possible. Stop yelling at people. Stop being dicks to each other. I know that's too much to ask for most people, but that's the message I choose to convey. That's the message I choose to have. So that's it. I think I want to come up with a movie for each of us to watch, do a movie of the week type of thing. I said that last week. Maybe we'll actually coordinate that and we'll talk about it next week because we both like movies. We both like talking about other stuff. So
true.
We'll look into that. All right. Well, if you made it this far, thank you. I love you. Please rate and review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Sports Up Sidelines podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.